Good day. Welcome to the Corey Morgan Show. Oh, lots to cover today. As usual, we have like an embarrassment of riches and stories to cover. Not too many are good news, I'm afraid, but they are news and they're important. And we got to discuss them. We got to chew on them. We've got to think about them and hopefully come up with some solutions now and then. It's always easier to point out problems than solutions, but hey, you're supposed to do what you're good at, right? And I'm sure good at finding them and pointing them out. I do point out solutions now and then too. More of that goes into my columns and other things. This show is live, at least for those who are watching it live. You guys watching it on cable, maybe not. But if you're watching live, use that comment area. I see Bruce Leslie already making a comment. Send things, questions my way, comments, ideas, notions. I see them all. I don't necessarily read them all out, but it helps prompt the show and keep it moving. Remind me, there are people on the other side of that camera tuning in. So let's get on to things. It's been an interesting weekend. I actually had to whip into Vancouver and back. Jane and I left on Friday morning and came back on Monday evening. And while I was passing back into Calgary on the Monday, of course, probably lots of people heard about it. I went through those protests on the side of the highway. I saw the crowds there over by Highway 22 and Highway 1. Wasn't so bad for me going eastbound. For the people going west, though, they were pretty backed up. I heard anything from, an hour, 40 minutes to a couple hours in waiting. Either way, though, what I want to talk about then, and I'll get on with this, is what's up? Why are the protests happening so much? Not just this one, but it constantly, left, right, center, doesn't matter. Well, I mean, most people would rather do darn near anything than stand on a street corner or a highway waving a protest sign. I mean, time's a precious commodity, and using it to stand jumbled within a crowd while police and many folks passing by are often less than supportive of your efforts, well, it's a sign of desperation. On Monday of this Easter weekend, thousands of Canadians in dozens of locations went out to protest the latest increase of Trudeau's carbon tax. So why are more and more people subjecting themselves, though, to the elements and possibly the long arm of the law with protests across Canada? Well, it's pretty simple. It's because they feel helpless. They're frustrated and they're out of options. You see, in Canada's system, once a person's elected to office, there's no mechanisms for citizens to hold them accountable. No matter how poorly a politician might govern, the people are stuck with them until the next election. Now, some people will say, well, that's just how democracy works, and they kind of have a point. People got the chance to select their elected officials, and they should have to live with their decisions, or at least within reason. There were cases, though, where the politicians grossly misrepresented themselves when applying for the job during an election. And yes, we have a local example in Calgary. Jody Gondek has become, and she's managed to become, Calgary's most unpopular mayor in Calgary history. And she's barely served more than half of her first term. Gondek campaigned as a moderate, won the election based on that. As soon as she became mayor, she pivoted into a crazed woke agenda. She ushered in an insane $87 billion climate change plan. She torpedoed an agreement for construction of a new arena. She committed hundreds of millions of dollars to an electric bus program and brought in a single-use plastic ban, which enraged the city when it was implemented. Not to mention how far she went out of her way to piss off our local Jews. Taxes to fund those plans have spiraled as well, of course. Now, had Gondek campaigned on doing all those things in the first place, sure, some citizens would still be upset, I mean, when those initiatives came about, but I think they'd be more inclined to accept it until the next election because, well, that's what she said she was going to do. But since Gondek deceptively campaigned as something else, people feel they've been misled and that she should be held accountable for that. I mean, a recall petition in Calgary was initiated and it's garnered a lot of interest. Alas, the legislation for recall in Alberta is terribly flawed and the bar for successful petitioning is set impossibly high. After months of hard effort, it appears the recall Gondek campaign will have only reached a little more than 10% of the signatures required to force a recall. And that's not to say the petition's been a total failure. It's put an embarrassing spotlight on just how terrible Gondek has been as a mayor, and it's shown how ridiculous the current recall legislation is in Alberta. All the same, though, if recall was the goal, it was an exercise in futility. And many people now are going to feel even more frustrated with the process. Last weekend at a Calgary Flames game, thousands of attendees, and it made national news, booed Jody Gondek as she walked onto the ice for a ceremony. And there's been many pearl clutchers, and they've been aghast with the disrespect shown to the mayor. Well, they'd be better served to try and understand why people are so upset in the first place rather than complaining about the people being upset. Citizens are exasperated and they want to show their discontent however they can, even at a hockey game. Federally and provincially, citizens face the same dilemma. There's no way for citizens to remove an elected official, no matter how terrible that official is. Canada's Senate It's ostensibly the House of Sober Second Thought. It's supposed to hold Parliament accountable. Come on. In reality, the Senate's an insult to democracy, as appointed members act as rubber stamps for the Prime Minister's policies. It's just a patronage pit for old folks to get a really big pension before they fully retire. And while the Trudeau government is an incredibly low level of public support, citizens remain stuck with them as they're propped up by the NDP. And Jagmeet Singh isn't widely popular in Canada either. But through his ugly alliance with Trudeau, Canadians get to enjoy being governed by not one but two parties that don't really represent them. It shouldn't be easy to remove an elected official from power. That's fair. Recall initiatives should have a high bar to be invoked. We don't want to live in a world of endless recalls and by-elections. Premiers and prime ministers shouldn't be removed from power on a whim. While it shouldn't be easy to remove an elected person from power, it should be possible. A report from Canada's RCMP warned that civil unrest is growing and is going to continue to grow in Canada due to bad governance and upset citizens. The government's likely going to ignore that warning. In Canada's system, the lack of accountability among politicians is making people desperate. And as the desperation grows, anger grows. And people are going to feel more inclined to take on dangerous or even illegal ways to express themselves to pursue change. When a person's back against the wall, they will lash out. We're only seeing the warning signs now, and it's going to get worse. We could avoid much of this civil disorder if only there was a reasonable way for citizens to have their voices heard and respected by politicians between elections. Unfortunately, there's little indication that politicians want to change the system in any way that might disempower themselves. So I'm afraid that means things are going to get much worse before they get better. So again, yes, I'm the bearer of some bad tidings, but it's worth bringing up, guys, because we're going to see more disorder. We're seeing it growing now, and we're going to see it growing further. So good to see all you guys checking in the comments. Mr. Stanley Paradoxy, Theo Unpronounceable from Mission, and Carol all there. So, okay, let's get somebody else to check in. We got something different today. Jen Hodgson has some big shoes to fill. She's giving us the news check-in. She's one of our reporters here in Calgary because Dave is taking off somewhere sunnier. How's it going, Jen?
Going pretty good, Corey. How you doing?
I'm all right. Shirt's a little wrinkled, but that's a separate story. So, what's topping the news today, Jen?
Well, Corey, to your point about carbon tax protests, they're going on nationwide. We've seen footage from provinces across the country, people coming out. And as you say, it's no fun task to be out spending your day protesting on the street. But really, Canadians are coming out in droves about this. And though Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre has the campaign to axe the tax, he actually refused to answer yesterday about whether or not Canada would withdraw from the Paris agreements if he were elected. So he's being a bit evasive about that and still pushing for a change to green energy. On another note, we have some made stories developing, or the idea of romanticizing suicide. Jordan Peterson retweeted a post from a young Dutch woman, a 28-year-old Dutch girl who has depression and borderline personality, who is going to be suicided by the state in May. She doesn't want to burden her boyfriend, she said, as her reason for carrying through with this. And here in Canada, we have the 27-year-old with autism whose father has filed an appeal now to the court that had ruled that she actually is eligible for MAID here in Canada. So we're seeing this encroachment towards people with mental disabilities to be applying and accepted for MAID or other kinds of assisted suicide across the world. Speaking of across the world, we have an ongoing inquiry into the China election interference. It came out yesterday that there's 13 ridings in Canada that allegedly have been affected by foreign interference. The Trudeau's government, the federal officials had hundreds of complaints about this election interference. However, the Conservative Party, which itself was targeted by pro-liberal interference by Chinese agents, allegedly, for the 2019 and 2021 election, the Conservatives weren't informed. The federal government kept that close to their collar. Next up, we have the upcoming eclipse that's coming up next Monday. And so we've seen states and provinces take all kinds of precautions. Most recently, the Niagara Falls region here in Canada declared a state of emergency. And this week, the state of Indiana declared a state of emergency. Oklahoma is calling in the National Guard. We have Nassau shooting 3 rockets at the eclipse. So we've got all kinds of chaos surrounding
What are people expecting? Are aliens behind this, or is there going to be mass explosions? I mean, I think there's been a few million eclipses over the last few millennia or whatnot, and the world didn't end. Why is this one the one that's bringing about a state of emergency?
Right. It's certainly very hyped, and I think that people actually don't know what to expect because of all that hype. It is a naturally occurring event. We've seen solar eclipses before. However, it seems that this particular one is causing a lot of controversy, with most provinces and states are citing the influx of people that they're expecting to their region. And that's why they've preemptively, by the way, called a state of emergency. Niagara Falls in Canada is currently in a state of emergency because of an eclipse that is expected next week.
Ah, great. What else we got?
All right. So we have some social media scandals. We have Facebook caught spying on Snapchat users and looking at their data, collecting their data, as well as the U.S. government has ordered YouTube to identify users who have actually watched certain YouTube videos and have watched them more than once. So we have this monitoring and this data hacking going on with social media companies. And finally, Corey, I'll end with this, trans insanity that has come across our country. So I came across this morning a tweet from the Liberal MP, the sports minister, pushing transgender in sports, saying that it's an evidence-based assertion that biological men can play on women's teams and vice versa. And also in this context, we have an Ontario man who wants to have a vagina constructed alongside his penis, so he will actually have both anatomical parts. And the courts are going to decide if it's actually Ontario taxpayers that are going to foot the bill for this or not.
So if that guy, gal, whatever, manages to knock himself up, who's responsible for child support?
I guess it would probably be taxpayers as well, Corey.
Well, geez, you know, I mean, it's bad enough paying for my own. I imagine there's probably some physiological things that would prevent that. But boy, it's getting to the point where we just have to foot the bill for every modification. I can't wait till somebody wants labia for earlobes. Told you I was going to make it hard on you today. No, thank you very much. I'll leave you alone, Jen.
Thanks, Corey.
Well, I'll let you get back to writing up more news. There's a big void to fill while Dave's run off. So I appreciate the check-in today, and we'll see you after the show.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
Great, thanks.
Okay, bye.
So that is our Jen Hodgson. You see, there's a lot of stories by her, very prolific writing on all sorts of issues there in Calgary, in Alberta, and as you can see, around the world. So let's see what else we got going on. Just before we get to my next guest here, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. We've had him on before with Mr. Geisbrecht, but we'll have him back. He's been writing some columns for the Western Standard as well. Getting on, I don't even know where to begin. Trudeau has a lunch program coming out for $1 billion. So this government that made the Trans Mountain pipeline go from $4.5 billion to $40 billion and delayed it by years and years, is now going to take on the responsibility of feeding your children. I can't see what possibly could go wrong with this, right? It's just madness. But this seems to be the trend of the Liberal government right now. They keep jumping into provincial jurisdiction, throwing our own money back at us. And then, of course, if anybody questions it, you oppose feeding children, you oppose free dentistry, you oppose this, you oppose that. They're laying landmines is what they're doing. They're laying the traps for the next election. So even though these policies are all stupid, if anybody opposes them, the usual gang will come out and call you nasty and evil for daring to oppose what is sure to be a terribly poorly mismanaged program, probably run by a few Liberal insiders where they'll charge $500 a sandwich and only feed 6 kids a month per school or something. But here it comes. Yes, Justin, who's probably never made his own sandwich his entire life, is now going to take $1 billion of your dollars and take on the responsibility of feeding your kids. I'm really looking forward to seeing how well that one works out. All right. Let's get on to something a little bit more important and bigger, and that is residential schools. Yes, we're getting on the 3-year anniversary of the big, I'll say it, you know, with the air quotes, discovery in the Kamloops residential school site. Retired Justice Brian Geisbrecht, he's written columns for us. He's been on the show before, and he's written a book on this. Welcome back to the show, Brian. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Corey.
So, I mean, you know, you've written a lot on this, as I said, from a book to columns and so on. I just kind of want to start there. We're getting near 3 years since the world got turned upside down with the anomalies discovered in the Kamloops residential school site in an old apple orchard. But there's been no effort yet to actually verify that there's actually any remains there, right?
That's right. And there won't, I don't think there will be any, Corey. The only residential schools where they actually did this turned up absolutely no one. So there have already been searches at Pine Creek, Shubenacadie, and a couple of others. And they were there were the same stories about priests murdering and secretly burying children with the forced help of 6-year-olds, that type of nonsense. And the people really believed it. That's the sad part. And when they dug this up, they found, no, there was nothing there. And so Kamloops is, by now, they know that there are no bodies, and they are not going to be digging. They claim now as well, this is a sacred ground or something like that. But we know that's not true because in Winnipeg, they just, the governments are spending $40 million to sift on a totally pointless search to dig up toxic landfill reserve. So there aren't going to be any excavations there because they know that there are no bodies. That's I'm quite sure that the sophisticated people in that community realize that they've made a terrible mistake.
I mean, a principled person would still want the mistake rectified. I mean, this has caused so much pain for the people who believe that these things happened, and uncertainty and division between, you know, social populations that already had enough division to begin with. And I mean, you know, to play the devil's advocate, what if there really are children buried there? It only makes sense that we would exhume them and find out if it was recent enough to try and find a perpetrator, and also to try and reunite those remains with the family so they could be properly interred. It's ridiculous that they claim that these things happened, but then say that we aren't going to investigate further.
Well, of course, and if there had been 215 children, or then the thousands that were later claimed, you would have some history of that. You would have parents who had gone to the authorities or the chief and said, "Well, my children disappeared at residential school. Where are they?" There's absolutely no history of it. No, we were our group. I should explain, Corey. Our research group came together very shortly after the original claim. I had written an article in a newspaper saying basically what I say now, that no, these are stories. This is a conspiracy theory, and we've been working on this for some time, and we recently found out some very interesting information. Our lead researcher has found out that really this is all part of a conspiracy theory which goes back to the 1990s and which really was incorporated by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, this idea that there's thousands of disappeared children. It comes from a fellow named Kevin Annett, who was a defrocked United Church minister and made it his life's mission to tell wild tales about thousands, hundreds of thousands of children being killed at residential schools. And somehow, through our elected representatives, by the way, it was through an MP by the name of Gary Morasty, this eventually became part of TRC, that's the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's search. They had no business doing it, but they went on this wild goose chase. And that's why I believe, that's why Canadians were so willing to believe this absolutely improbable story about priests murdering and secretly burying children with the forced help of 6-year-olds. So they've been basically conditioned, and even all of the reporters in the mainstream news have sort of been conditioned to believe that this story must be true, but of course it's completely false.
And that's another, you know, lacking piece of this puzzle. I mean, if thousands of children, even hundreds of children, had disappeared, that would mean they would have hundreds and or thousands of family members asking questions. They would say such and such left the household at this time and never returned. We don't have that. I mean, they keep talking about missing children, but there's none or next to none documented that actually went missing. They've been accounted for. I mean, some children passed away in those schools. Some were buried at schools. Some were repatriated to their home reserves. But there's no bunch missing. I mean, if there was a parent saying, I think my child was murdered and buried in Kamloops, they probably would be digging.
Well, in fact, the children who went to residential schools were actually far better documented than Indigenous children who didn't go to the schools. Only a tiny fraction of Indigenous children went to these residential schools in the first place. But they were very carefully documented, in large part because the federal government didn't want to spend any more money than they had to. They're notoriously cheap. That's part of the history. They were trying to save money on what for them was a very expensive program. So they did not want to pay for children that were not attending. So the children are very well documented. And when a child did die from, and it was almost always from disease, either tuberculosis or during the influenza epidemics, because Indigenous children were much more likely to die, whether they went to residential schools or day schools or any school. Those children were very carefully documented. There was a report, internal report made. These were Christian schools, so they all had a Christian burial. And the vast majority of these children are buried on their home reserves. They were buried by their families with their priests or with their ministers. And Kimberly Murray, who is the interlocutor, has even admitted this. She said, if you're looking for the missing children, you'll find them in the cemeteries. All you have to do is go to the find the death certificates, which is what the researcher in our group had the presence of mind to do. And you can find where these children were actually buried. So there are no missing children. Corey, Tom Flanagan, who's in our group, said, no, they're not missing children. These are forgotten children. These are children that were buried. The cemeteries were not properly maintained for various reasons. And now the families, 100 or 100 and some odd years later, think that something horrible happened to them. Well, no, these are just children who sadly died of disease in the early days. And as I say, residential schools had nothing to do with it. Day school children died too. Most of the children didn't even go to school, and too many of them died as well. So there is no story here, but unfortunately, the TRC and then this particular odd government we had and its ally, CBC, have created a story where there shouldn't be one. And my big worry is that this is all going to start tumbling down once this government, once the CBC in its present form is gone. And we are in for a lot of trouble because the Indigenous communities believe these false stories. So we have a problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, if I believed that, you know, some cousins of mine or ancestors had been so ill-treated, murdered, hidden, abused like that, I'd be upset as well. I mean, and I perhaps would lash out if I felt there was no recourse. But this government seems to be more inclined to perpetuate or even expand the mythology rather than in the irony as a truth and reconciliation commission. They should be peeling off the band-aid and finding the truth.
Well, they've all painted themselves into a corner. We even see it getting worse all the time. Just the other day, we had a Vancouver archbishop who is now promoting the Kamloops stories. He's basically spreading a Kevin Annette conspiracy theory. And by the way, Corey, people can Google what I'm saying. Just go online and get Kevin Annette's famous movie, Unrepentant. You can download it free and watch it. And this is where this junk comes from. These are conspiracy theories, but they were even believed by very smart people. Noam Chomsky praised the documentary. Even Jordan Peterson, of all people, believed at least some version of Indigenous children being burned in burning barrels in the 1960s, for heaven's sake. So we have some very smart people who've just bought into this junk, and I'm afraid that I single out CBC because they're the ones that are being paid salaries, they're not even looking at this stuff. And I have some personal experience with this, where the level of knowledge of CBC reporters is dismal. And they don't only report on this particular issue, but all residential school issues. Incompetently, they keep reporting that all the children went to residential schools, a fraction did. They report that the children were forced to attend. Well, no, in the usual case, parents had to apply to send their children to residential schools, and many of them were refused because there wasn't room. But this was a voluntary thing on the part of most parents. So we have a staggering level of incompetence in the reporting, and that's been going on for decades now. And so Canadians have been conditioned to this, to believe this stuff.
And this really distracts and takes away from what we do have. I mean, a very serious crisis on our hands. Another thing with poorly educated people, a lot of people just haven't gone out enough. I spent 20 years in the oil field. I worked on reserves across the country, up in the from the territories and into a number of provinces. We've got a socioeconomic catastrophe going on just about every reserve in Canada. We've got some very troubled people. We got things getting worse year by year by every measure, whether it's economic, whether it's justice, whether it's health, you name it. And here we are fighting over things that didn't happen 100 years ago when we should be addressing what's going on today, right now, on those reserves. In fact, we're making it worse because we're increasing division and the bitterness between the people on reserve and the people off.
Well, I'd go even further and say that this is being done by many as almost as a distraction from the real problem, because as you point out, the problem is not people who died 150 years ago or 100 years ago. The problem is right now. And what they've done is this particular government and even our Supreme Court, they've created this illusion that, well, we have a solution for problems. We're going to spend a lot of money. We're going to go further and further into this nation-to-nation concept. And we're going to go on this quest for reconciliation, and this is going to fix the problems. That's nonsense. And the idea that residential schools cause the problems of Indigenous people, well, it's one on a very long list of problems that have to be addressed, but they are not being addressed. We're in a nonsense world. We're spending a great deal of money. We're relying on new legislation like this atrocious UNDRIP bill, which is going to just completely stall and development and hurt our economy greatly. So we're on a very bad path, and I have to hope that some new government is going to take a look at this stuff and realize, no, we're going in the wrong direction and trying to waste time and money on these false missing children's claims is not helping at all.
Yeah, and so, I mean, just to expand for people, if they're wondering, they've probably heard the term before. That UNDRIP is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, I believe. And yeah, it's a terrible document, which is only going to make things much, much worse, and it's being taken seriously here, unfortunately. But, I mean, that's the bottom line. Is people kind of need to research, get beyond the buzzwords, and see what's really going on out there. As you said, the documents are there. The information is there. People like yourself or Nina or Dr. Flanagan have been doing a fantastic work, Amy Rubenstein, on at least documenting what we know and what's out there. Where can people find more information on all this, Brian?
Well, I'm a contributor, so I'm plugging the book, I guess. But Grave Error is an excellent a book to start with. It contains a number of the essays written by members of our group about this Kamloops claim, this false Kamloops claim. And I'm also a contributor and author in From Truth Comes Reconciliation, which is another book, and we're coming out with another edition of this book very soon. In addition, you can go to our site, the Indian Residential Research Group site, and that is an excellent source of material. And Jaime Rubenstein's site is also very good. He posts a different essay every day, so that's a good place to start.
Great. Well, yeah, I mean, the UNDRIP thing, you mentioned that. That's a whole show on its own if we want
to go
over there. And that's why I wanted to leave off on, offering other resources for people to get out there because, we've run out of time. And I know, just to give another plug, you've written some columns for us at the Western Standard on other things too, some of the woke insanity and things such as that. So let the viewers know to watch for your name and catch those. And I appreciate your work on this and your book and you're coming on to talk to us about it today.
Anytime, Corey.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm sure we'll talk again. So that was Brian Geisbrecht. And yes, the book is Grave Error. Look it up, guys. I mean, we really got to get to the facts of this thing. It just keeps going on and on and it's not, nobody's winning. If you want to talk about some sort of issue or subject or something where there's a winner and a loser, we're all losing, guys. We're just a whole bunch of losers. The only ones winning, I guess, are there's a whole area. I mean, some people have called it in past books the Indian industry. There's a lot of lawyers, bureaucrats, advocates. They're winning because they keep the anger, they keep the disorder, they keep the division going, and they make a whole lot of money on this issue. They don't solve any problems. In fact, they exacerbate them, but they get paid really well to do so. So endless court challenges or things like doing GPR surveys of known cemeteries and saying, look, I've discovered graves. Yes, it was next to the headstone. What a shocker. Good work. Brilliant. And then the ones where there wasn't a headstone, and as Brian pointed out, the few times they've actually excavated to confirm it, it turned out there was nothing there. Radar has very big limitations on what it can or can't identify. Now, I see there's a commenter, Wes Wayne, has been putting out a bunch of the baloney out there on the comments, and that's fine for those reading it, saying, the clergy wouldn't bury them on church grounds. They were throwing them in rivers and blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, nobody's been reported missing, Wes. So who, where, how, when? You're just spouting BS. But this BS is getting entrenched, and some people are believing it. And the people who believe it are getting pretty darn upset. And I mean, something I didn't get a chance to talk to Brian about. I mean, we've had, 80 churches now that have been vandalized or defaced or burned to the ground? This is serious business. And meanwhile, the myths get perpetuated. We need evidence, real evidence, not stories, not myths, not old wives' tales, evidence. Tell you what, oral history sucks. Play the telephone game. You know that game. Everybody sits in a circle, whispers something in their ear, go around in a circle and see what it sounds like. By the time it gets to the end person, it's totally different than whatever you began with. And we're supposed to believe the oral history of children from the 50s all the way to today. And turns out whenever we checked into the evidence, a lot of it wasn't there. So yeah, Brian's working on getting to the truth. He's working with a group that's getting to the truth. So watch for his columns, watch for his items. So let's talk about another fool since we're there. Catherine Ford. She's an established columnist with the Calgary Herald, been there a long time. It's getting back to Jody Gondek, mayor of Calgary. And yes, most people across the country saw it. I mean, Gondek, you don't often see a Western Canadian mayor trending across X like that. But Gondek managed to do it because when she walked out onto the ice for a ceremony at the Saddle Dome in Calgary for the Calgary Flames game, the whole place booed her. I mean, it wasn't just a handful of people booing. It was a rumbling, low booing from the majority of the crowd. And people were just, they're upset. They're horrified. But you see, now what does Ford come up with? She says, and this is from the headline of her column, "Sexism, racism still lurk in the shadows as Gondek faces recall petition." Straight as usual to the identity politics. Oh, look, people are trying to recall Gondek. People are booing Gondek. People don't like Gondek. It must be because they don't like her. They despise her because she's a woman of South Asian descent and because she's a woman, right? That must be the reasons. No, it's not. It's because she sucks. It's because she literally is the worst mayor in Calgary history as far as polled support demonstrates. So why do you got to throw that in there? Are you doing Gondek any favors? Mrs. Ford? Ford brings up a bunch of crap in there about how the Petroleum Club in Calgary, she's trying to point out Calgary's a hotbed of misogyny and nastiness towards women because the Petroleum Club didn't even allow women into it until into the early 90s. And that's true. That is true. And it was wrong. But it was also 30 friggin' years ago. The problem with Gondek has absolutely nothing to do with that. She says in her own column, I don't really actually have any evidence of this, but you can tell there's an undertone of it in there. An undertone. See, talk about spreading division. The people who read crap and believe crap read her crap And they embrace her crap and it makes them crappier for it. Okay, enough about crap. But I mean, talk about misinformation. We're not talking about somebody who hasn't been around for a long time. Catherine Ford's been writing a long, long time. She's aware of what she's doing. She's aware of what she's writing. This had nothing to do with racism. I'm sure there's some racists out there. I'm sure there's some people who said some terrible things about Gondek because of her race. That's wrong. I blocked a few of those on X myself. I had one, ding dong going on about Ninshi should be deported and people of his ilk. And, whoa, okay, a couple of things. Ninshi is born in Canada. I got no use for him. Rest assured, I spent a lot of time beating on the head Ninshi. But he's born in Canada. Don't go into that deporting stuff. Let's get real. But yes, the racists exist out there and some of the anti-women. But the point, bottom line, that's not what got Gondek down to the point of whatever it is, 20% support in the city now or whatever record low it is. Mr. Stanley's pointing out a good point, a commenter saying she's only the mayor. She doesn't actually control everything. There is a council. Yes, she's one of 15. That's absolutely true. But the mayor controls the communications, the mayor controls the direction, and the mayors and cities in Calgary are very powerful, though, actually. They can impose a lot of things or a lot of attitude and things that come along. But yes, she is supported by a lot of terrible councillors as well. But no, it was her directly who brought in that $87 billion climate change plan. It was her who torpedoed the arena. And again, you might think it was a good idea to get out of the arena. That's certainly very debatable. But that's not what she campaigned on. If she'd have gone in on the campaign saying, I'm going to blow up the arena deal, then she would do so. But yeah, this is one of the items from Catherine Ford's column, before I move on from this one. I make this assumption about the underlying sexism waged against Gondek and hold this opinion for a simple reason. Been there, done that. Lived through outright sexism. No, Ford, some of your columns sucked. That's part of why I didn't like you much in the past. But... The underlying, right? That's why. And make this assumption. Yeah, it's because you had no bloody evidence, Ford. Yeah, Gondek's a terrible, terrible mayor. Get over it. Speaking of terrible, let's get a little more national and talk about Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, one of everybody's favorite subjects, right? There was an interesting, candid moment yesterday from Trudeau. I think it was yesterday that came out. Recently, anyways. The video clip is out there. And it was funny because this video clip, you hear protesters in the background and there's hammering drums and yelling and shouting. I mean, again, it's getting back to my original monologue. People are getting upset. They're protesting everywhere. Trudeau can't go anywhere without being surrounded by protesters. But he did say, and he admitted, that Canada has been taking in too many immigrants, more immigrants than it's able to absorb. Good. I mean, even though I get no use for Trudeau, I'm glad to see him acknowledging the problem finally. Finally. People have been screaming this from the rooftops for years. We can't take them in at this speed, at this level, while supporting them when they get here. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the healthcare ability, the education ability. We certainly don't have the housing for the level we're at. Nobody reasonable is saying end all immigration. Some people are saying that, but as I said, nobody reasonable is saying that, but we need to get it in line. And Trudeau finally admitted that. But then he talked outside of it as if it wasn't a problem that he made in the first place. This has all started since you became the prime minister. At least say, we screwed up. He won't do it. He won't say it. And you know what? That's fine. I think that's fine because Canadians see through it. And if that dingbat is finally going to acknowledge a problem that 90% of us already knew, but still won't show even a little bit of contrition that he was the one who brought about the problem in the first place, it's really going to make sure, as long as it's bloody well going to be, but he's going to be wiped out in the next election. Rightly so. But I still am a little bit happy that whatever, so he's not taking full responsibility for it, if he's at least acknowledging that it's a problem, then he might actually tap the brakes on it. We can't afford this. It's young people can't even dream of owning a home. People are waiting months and months and months just to find a family doctor. They're waiting years to see a specialist. And we talk about the housing crisis. Well, we need more immigrants to build the houses. Sure, but we got to target that then. Are we bringing in predominantly electricians and plumbers and carpenters? Landscapers even, or in medicine, are we bringing in more doctors and pharmacists and chemists and nurses? Because that's where we have the need. Bring that in. Target those categories until we can sustain who's coming in. Then we can look to broaden it. It's a good place to be. You know, Canada's GDP per capita is plummeting due to bad management and a many number of things, but we're still one of the better countries on the planet to be in. There's a lot of people really want to come here badly and work and make a life for themselves. And it's a great place to be where we're here now. And it's great to be able to bring some people in and allow them, like almost the rest of our ancestors did, to come here and make a better life. That's great. But we got to do it with planning and with care. We haven't done that. It's made a mess. But at least step one, you know, as a friend of Bill W. myself, I remember all 12 steps. And that first one really is admitting, you know, there's a problem. And he's gotten there. He's got a lot of steps to go. I just want him gone. I don't think he's going to get through those steps. But Trudeau did admit at least the root of the problem. That's taken a lot of time and kicking and screaming. Bringing in skilled, this is a commenter just goes by the letter R. Bringing in skilled people is awesome, but it doesn't make them supposedly upgrade for years before they can practice their trade. Okay, so I think what you're getting at, and there's some truth to that. We've had a lot of problems in being at least fast in making sure that the people we're bringing in can transfer their qualifications straight over. They might come from a country that has lower standards. Some of the countries have higher standards for some of the trades or professions. We have to make allowances for that, but we shouldn't also keep the new Canadians on the hook for months and months at a time while we determine that, or stop a lot of people from working in the things they're well qualified for because of the bureaucracy and trying to make them reprove where they are. Though you can't just let somebody come in and start practicing medicine without ensuring that we have enough qualifications and skills. I mean, if you're a doctor from some countries, it might not be quite as good as what we're offering here. But there's a lot of countries that put out fantastic professionals and trades and all sorts of things, and we would benefit by having them here. Let's talk about, here's the latest, we've been talking, I've been going along and touring and speaking events for talking about the Alberta pension plan idea, you know, the province going its own way and getting its own pension. That's been a big issue out here. It's been a big across the country because, of course, if Alberta pulls out of the pension scheme nationally, the national scheme's going to have a lot of trouble paying the bills as Alberta over-contributes. And I'm going to go down that rabbit hole. Every Albertan, person by person, is the same amount as the rest. I understand that. But as a whole, Alberta over-contributes a lot and underdraws. And then the people poo-pooing on it, the people saying we should be satisfied with the Canadian pension plan, the people saying we're whiners out in Alberta, how dare us question this fantastic Canada pension plan? Well, the average payout for CPP, average, for a person once you retire and get it out, is $758 a month. That's it. That's it. You could have worked for decades. It depends on how long you've been working, how much you've put in. The average is $758 a month you're supposed to live on and retire. On the top, I think it's about $1,300, $1,400 a month if you have maximized contributions all the way up and managed to take them out. If you're a member of parliament, yeah, member of parliament, the average member of parliament pension is $78,000 a year. Yeah, yeah. They're almost 10 times the average of what other Canadians who work a whole lifetime towards. And these are the ones, they're sitting on a $78,000 average. Some of them are getting a pension well into six figures. Telling us, shut up, be happy with your $758 a month. Just tighten your belt a little. Don't worry, Justin's making sandwiches for the kids in school, right? We'll all be all right. The hypocrisy, the disconnect, the lack of vision on this. And they see their pension, they don't put a heck of a lot into it. I mean, they put a chunk in, sure, but they get pension matching in a way from the taxpayers on top of that that we can't even dream of. Plus, it's a separate fund. It's not like the CPP. Unacceptable for instance, there's no money left. Trudeau spent it all. Not quite true. As far as at least the actuarial records go, the pension fund, the Canada Pension Fund, has about 33%. Self-funding, a balance going on, a principal. And that was started in the 90s. It used to be fully pay-as-you-go. Now 30% of it isn't. Still, almost 70% is pay-as-you-go, which means we have to keep people pumping money in to keep the last ones paid off. Another term for it is a Ponzi scheme, kind of, because you got to keep broadening that base to increase the payments to the top. And as people are living longer, you got to think this pension came about in the 60s? People on average back then died, I hate to say it, but the average life expectancy was in your 60s. So they figured people retire when they're 65. A lot of them even aren't even going to make it that long, and they're probably only going to live a few years afterwards so we can afford to pay them out. Problem is now we're living until into our 80s on average, and it's great. But it's also making it a lot more expensive to try and sustain and maintain pensions for the people like that. So, yeah, we get issues with that. Either way, again, so we got this terrible pension plan, and Albertans are nasty for daring to try and seek a better way. That hypocrisy is really well exposed when we see that our members of Parliament are averaging $78,000 a year as a pension. I mean, and when you're pensioning, you're expected to be kind of making a little bit less. You're just kind of getting by and retiring and relaxing. But if you're a member of Parliament, you're getting more in pension than your average person even makes when they're at the peak of their working life. I mean, I don't expect them to work for minimum wage in Parliament, but come on, guys. And again, they get Canada pension on top of that and a number of other things as well, I'm sure. So, and they're the ones telling us, tighten your belts. Right. So, I mean, to finish out, yes, this is a story. It was in Blacklocks. I think this is a standard might pick it up. It says there's a document that came out. The cabinet federally needs new strategies to restore public trust in the government of Canada. Yeah, it was an access to information memo. Yeah, again, they're sort of figuring it out. Geez, people don't trust them. Well, why? How could I not trust somebody who's telling me, hey, Corey, enjoy your retirement after a lifetime of work at $758 a month whilst I whisk off to my private island on $80,000 a year pension? God, it's stomach turning, but it's par for the course in Canada. People are protesting. People are screaming. People are shouting. Sometimes they push it a little too far. Maybe I'll talk about that in a future show. Either way, I'm out of time for today. That is the show. We covered a lot of ground and a lot of issues. There are more I wanted to hit, but we just don't have more time. Stay tuned. The pipeline's going to be on later on tonight. And of course, I will be back here again, guys, next week at this time. Be sure to share the YouTube and all those socials with others so we can grow this audience. Thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for subscribing, by the way. I forgot to mention that. Get on there. That's how we do it. WesternStandard.news/subscription. See you next week.